Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And he's Matt. And today we're talking work from home or raise, taxes are a waste of time, and the worst way to travel.
Sign me up for that worst way to travel.
That sounds awesome.
This is our Friday flight episode where every Friday we look at the different headlines that have come across our screens this past week, and we talk about the different ways that they're going to impact your money. And Joel, before we kind of dive into the stories, we've been talking about the different vaccine incentives. Did you see that more states are kind of unrolling these programs to make sure folks are getting vaccinated in their states?
They're following in Ohio's footsteps. I love seeing that.
Because I didn't realize at the time. I guess we talked about this last week or a couple weeks ago, but it's called the Ohio Vax-a-Million, which I love. I mean, honestly, one reason I love the Vax-a-Million is because we thought about naming Westy instead of Westy, naming him Maximilian, which I think is such a, I don't know, it's kind of like this European old school kind of name.
I feel like he'd have to wear a bow tie if that was his name.
I don't think it would have fit our lifestyle, just the way we live life. We're super crunchy over here, but I like that name in particular, the Ohio's program, yeah.
Yeah, and I love seeing other states following suit. Essentially, Maryland has Vax Cash. If your state is doing one of these vaccine lotteries, we love to see it. Like, any way that we can incentivize people. We talked, was it last week, about incentives and how incentives are the essence of behavioral economics.
They make the world go around, dude.
If we can incentivize people properly, then we can get the right results. And I think, with the goal being to vaccinate more and more of the country, let's get people excited about it and help them maybe be able to win money. I love seeing kind of states taking this approach.
New York's is called Vaccine Scratch, which I understand, like the scratch-offs kind of thing. Yeah. But like the Vax and Scratch, kind of like the combination of that, doesn't that kind of make you feel like you're going to have a reaction to the shot?
It sounds a little creepy.
Kind of has like a negative connotation in my mind. But and also too, I saw that West Virginia, they're offering $100 gift cards, I think, to everybody, and that's going to be a retroactive deal as well. So basically, even though they're starting the program now, if you've gotten the vaccine and you can prove it, then you get that $100 gift card, dude.
Love it. Love seeing that stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll keep reporting if more of those things pop up. But Matt, let's keep moving on. Let's get to the Friday flight. More stories we found interesting this week and how they pertain to everyone's personal finances. And there's a lot to get to today. The first story we want to talk about has to do with shopping. And Matt, we've all, of course, been doing more online shopping over the last 15 months. And many of our favorite small businesses have been hit hard by that, right? A lot of our dollars have been going to some of the bigger online retailers, and fewer of those dollars going to some of the small businesses that we know and love, partly because we didn't feel comfortable going into that small business, right? Well, Google is trying to help those small businesses out. I like seeing this, that they're set to highlight more small business offerings when you're doing your online shopping. Google just partnered with Shopify to make it easier for folks to discover millions of smaller companies and brands. So oftentimes when you're researching a product, you get maybe like Costco, Walmart, whatever. Like, you
know, Amazon.
That's
all we look at.
Amazon, yes. All the biggest internet retailers, like those are the first ones you're going to see. But now, if you own a small business and you use Shopify, there's like a little opt-in thing you need to do on the back end of the website. But it's super simple to do that. And then the good news is that your stuff is going to appear alongside some of those major retailers, helping everybody, small business owners and online shoppers, discover some of these great goods that small business retailers who have their goods posted online as well are offering.
Yeah, so this is great for small businesses because essentially it levels the playing field, right? It allows them to get in front of online shoppers without having to fork out tons of money on advertising.
Yep.
And these small businesses don't have the kind of advertising budgets that some of these larger companies do.
Yeah, they just get like squashed, basically.
Yes. I mean, not just the online companies, but just the online marketplaces as well. I mean, they're also pushing their products pretty hard. But this is also good for online shoppers because, I mean, it makes it a little more fun, right? If you're being delivered results that aren't just the typical results, right, from Amazon or Walmart. I mean, literally, that's, I feel like, all we ever shop from when it comes to buying stuff online these days. But it seems like that the idea is for you to be able to discover unique goods. You're not just being fed the standard wares that everyone is being fed online.
The same good thread shirt that like eight people on your street are already wearing. Yeah. Maybe you can actually buy something semi-unique.
But I'm also kind of down with the idea of just not putting any thought towards, in particular, you mentioned clothes and like good thread. That's because I feel like I can kind of get behind just having like white like literally right now I'm wearing a white t-shirt. Just a plain white t-shirt with a pocket.
That's your Steve Jobs equivalent outfit.
It's true, yeah. But I'm kind of a weirdo. We don't need to go down that path.
That would be a really long episode if we talked about all
all the
different ways that you're weird.
It's true. Yeah, let's talk about your right to repair. There's a new report from the Federal Trade Commission that says that companies are making repairs too difficult for would-be DIYers, folks like me who are looking to replace their screen on their old iPhone SE. And that report calls out companies in a lot of different spheres that are doing this, from smartphone manufacturers all the way to larger purchases that we'd make, like car makers. And so, for instance, some electronics, they use the different specialized screws, dedicated tools, right? So not your typical flathead screwdriver. And they just use other techniques as well that make it far more difficult to even try to repair your items, like gluing things in place instead of having them be removable. So not being able to repair your phone or your laptop or making it more difficult to fix your car, this creates more waste, and it costs us all money. And so, yeah, we're glad to see that the FTC is shining some light on this.
Yeah, I would love to see a shakeup in here, because we all deserve to be able to repair the things that we buy a little bit easier. And when manufacturers are intentionally making it more difficult, that's super frustrating.
Yeah.
And so hopefully, yeah, this FTC report, you know, gains more light and manufacturers start to react. Because, yeah, we talked about planned obsolescence back in episode 266. It's hard to read this report and then not be frustrated, right, about what manufacturers are up to. But yeah, I think, too, at the same time, Matt, there is light at the end of the tunnel, because in that same report, it stated that 27 states have introduced right to repair legislation since January of this year. So just in 2021 alone, a lot of states have kind of caught on to this. And if those get passed, these laws are going to force manufacturers to offer customers access to the same information, the same parts, and the same tools that they give some of these authorized repair shops, putting the power back in your hands, making it a little easier to perform some of those repairs, to replace your own screen if you want, as opposed to have to taking it somewhere and paying someone $90, $100 to do it. You might be able to do it on your own for $15 to $20, which is, I think everyone deserves that right. And it's going to save us all a lot of money by being able to repair our own things much easier.
That's right. And it's not just our ability to make repairs on our goods too, but we're talking about somebody that's in between us doing it and an authorized retailer, right? So we're talking about as well third party repair shops. And when they don't have access to the right tools and the right parts, you can often be stuck with paying full price from an authorized repair shop, or then just tossing that good out. And that's when it can really affect those who can't afford a new item, right? Because instead of getting it repaired, or if it's just incredibly expensive to get it repaired because you can only go to an authorized shop, well, that might just total your phone. And you think, well, what's the point in spending, $150 to repair this thing when I could spend $200 and just get a brand new item? But even still, that's maybe $50 more that you would rather not have spent. But you're kind of tempted to do that anyway because you're thinking, oh, may as well get the latest technology, right?
Right, yeah. So we'll keep an eye on this because we want to see progress. We want to see some of these bills pass the state legislatures and in a lot of these states. It's going to make a big difference in all of our lives when it comes to being able to repair those items that we love that just got a little messed up.
Yeah, just that crack on the screen. That's no reason to throw a phone away.
No, right? Not at all.
All right, let's talk about taxes. Tax day was a couple, or the delayed tax day was a couple weeks ago, May 17th, of course. So we feel that now might be a good time to ask the question how folks feel about taxes just in general. You would assume maybe that most folks would respond negatively when asked about taxes, but the tax code, it can be confusing. But in poll after poll over the years, folks seem to be fond specifically of the deductions that they receive, even if that means added complexity. It's kind of like, I don't know, maybe how everyone, is okay with their own congressperson, yet they dislike Congress in general, right, as a whole.
The disparity in those numbers is just often incredible. 80% of people love their own congressperson, but 11% of people love Congress.
And think that they're doing a good job altogether, yeah. But a recent stat from the IRS reveals that the average American spends 11 hours filing their personal income taxes. I'm going to be honest, that feels like a lot of time. You know, I don't mind paying my taxes, but it would definitely be nice if we could make it a lot simpler and if it took a lot less time.
I think that is something, I think you're right. Like, we don't have to get rid necessarily of all of the potential deductions, but simplifying taxes for everyone's sake, I think would be really helpful. And actually, we have made tax day a little bit simpler for folks in recent years, thanks to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That increased standard deduction, it means that filing taxes has become simpler for tens of millions of folks.
A lot of folks don't have to itemize their deductions anymore.
That's right. It makes it really chill for just a good swath of the population to file their taxes, whereas it used to be more complicated. But there's still, I think, more that can be done to make filing taxes less frustrating and also to prevent them from sucking up so much of our time. It's that 11-hour number that just like that. That feels like overkill. It's unnecessary. And in a lot of other countries, citizens are sent a form that's already filled out because basically, you know, their central authority when it comes to taxation already has those numbers on you. They don't need you to fill them in and then send them their way. Countries like Germany, Japan, and the UK use what's called an exact withholding system. That means citizens aren't spending hours filing their taxes. It's basically done for them because of the way, like I said, income reporting happens in those countries. And those pre-filled forms, they not only cut down on the stress, they raise compliance at the same time. So if you're traditionally employed, the IRS has all this data. Like, why haven't we made it simpler like many of these other countries? It kind of baffles me. And yeah, that seeing that number, that it's 11 hours of people's time to file their taxes, like, why can't we get something like this going on? And I would love to see it become easier, simpler, and take less time for everybody to file their taxes, because we all know it's our civic duty and we're happy to do it. Just don't make me waste my time doing it.
Totally. Yeah, I'm in favor of pre-filled forms. But I mean, some countries, I mean, there is no form that you receive, right? Like the tax is just calculated. And like that, I'm not as much of a fan of, right? Like when it's like a sealed box where you can't peer inside and you can't see kind of like where, like how things are calculated. I think that's one of the reasons, again, going back to why Americans, why they like the current tax system, is because when you're able to kind of work a little bit and you're essentially hunting down these deductions and it feels good, you know, there's like a chemical release that happens in your brain when you're like, yes, I get to pay the government less money. And so I do like the idea. Yeah, pre-filled forms, that sounds good to me. But I don't know if I trust the government. Like, they're already deciding how much taxes I'm going to pay, but to allow them or even employers or businesses to calculate what your actual tax is, and for you to not have any say or to be able to make any modifications or adjustments, like, I guess that's the part of it that I feel like, ooh, feels pretty big government to me.
Yeah.
I think I'm more of a fan of kind of working for those deductions as opposed to kind of like sitting back. You know, I think I might like the more active approach versus, yeah, the kind of passive approach to taxes.
There's got
to
be some happy medium, though.
Yes,
right?
I agree, though. Yeah, I think
getting
there can
that form,
be ways for us to slim it down.
Yeah, then being able to make some adjustments based on, you know, what the numbers that the government has reported on you, as opposed to starting everything from scratch on your end. There's got to be a better way.
Yeah. Do you feel like you spent the average number of hours, 11 hours on your taxes?
No,
but
I also had someone file my return for me. So
that is money well spent.
Yes.
Yeah. Paying for an accountant when you have more complicated taxes or when you own investment properties like we do makes a lot of sense.
No doubt. All right. Well, let's move on, Matt. There was a really interesting story that listener Will shot over this week about investing. And basically,
thanks, Will.
Yeah. Big thanks, Will. We love it when people send us stories.
Always.
Yeah. So, or a ludicrous headline of the week. If you found something crazy in the headlines, we'll get to that actually in just a second. But Will sent over the story that there are more 401k and IRA millionaires now than ever before. And that was according to a recent data from Fidelity. And Matt, I feel like that makes a ton of sense, right? I think anybody could have said, yeah, I would imagine that there would be after kind of what the stock market's done over the last 11 years and particularly over the past year. I'm really glad for all those newly minted millionaires. But I think the thing I found most interesting in this survey data that was even cooler is that 17% of workers increased their contributions in the first quarter of this year. So I think, you know, as we've seen the stock market reaching new heights, people are like, I need to be putting more money in the market. That's great, right? Because that increased savings rate is actually what's going to help those people become retirement account millionaires way more quickly too. Putting more of your money to work for you, that is what's going to generate more wealth.
Yeah, that's how you become a millionaire,
yep.
Right? Like another stat in that survey was that the average 401k millionaire was setting aside at least 14% of their pay. So, you know, yeah, the stock market's incredible upward movement. It's just like the wind being at your back. But the only way that you're going to join that record number of millionaires is through that high savings rate. It's not rocket science, but it's interesting to see those specific numbers. And, you know, that 14% number specifically really tracks with what we've been telling listeners. You know, striving to invest around 15% of your income is going to have a major impact on your ability to reach financial independence. You know, the less you spend, the more you're able to invest, the faster you're going to be able to achieve financial independence. That's a great thing. But, you know, at the same time, there's more to life than just achieving financial independence.
There is.
Gotta have that balance.
That's right. Yeah. But 15% is a good number to aim for. I think lots of times what we tell people is a good goal. That's what they shoot for. And if we tell them 10%, that's what they're aiming for. But I think if 15% is your target, that's a better target because you're going to be able to build financial independence more quickly.
And generally speaking, we want our listeners to be above average.
Yeah.
You know, like whatever average is, you want to be above average because, you know, you know what average looks like. You can look around at your neighbors, at your coworkers, and what the average American has in debt, what they have in savings. We want to be better than average.
Yeah. And not in a way like we're better than other people, but in a way that, like, yeah, we want to save and invest like better than the average American because it's going to put us in a better position.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just about having different options available to you.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got more stories to get to, Matt, including the worst way to travel. And would you rather continue working from home or get a big raise? We'll talk about that and more right after this break.
Back, and we are covering the different stories we've come across this week. This is our Friday Flight episode. And Joel, now it's time for our ludicrous headline of the week.
Of the week.
Of the week. Of the week. We just need to say that a bunch of times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're getting better.
This week's ludicrous headline of the week comes from the Wall Street Journal. And the title of this article goes, "The Olympian Who Turned a Profit on Her Wedding." Dude, who turns a profit on their actual wedding?
Never heard of that before.
I
had to read it. I
heard of it either. Yeah.
What's the deal here?
So this couple did. This is a cool story because the general belief is that weddings, right, that they need to cost a fortune these days. But, and I'm going to butcher her name, but the subject of this article was Keturah Orhi, I think is maybe how you say it.
Probably.
But she will hopefully become the first American to medal in the triple jump in the upcoming Olympics. She set a strict limit of $5,000 for her small wedding last year. But she said that they actually stopped keeping track of what they were spending because they were so far under the $5,000 limit, which is awesome.
She's one of those examples of someone who, you know, we talk about how budgeting is important, but we have talked about there's this small sliver of people who don't necessarily need to budget. She might fit into that category.
Oh, no, she needs to because she just needs to know what the bar is, and then she's just going to blow it out of the water. I mean, if you're an Olympian, like,
yeah.
you're just wired that way, right? You're
just like crush every goal.
Seriously. But I really believe that a smaller budget can help you, you know, get more creative, and that that can result in a ceremony, you know, a wedding ceremony that's even cooler. But you might be wondering, how do they actually make money on their wedding? They didn't sell tickets or anything like that. But the monetary gifts of their friends and family, that surpassed what they actually spent. So in essence, they kind of turned a profit, you know, by getting married, which is pretty funny.
Pretty smooth, man. Pretty smooth. I like that. And that was a really cool story. And the article went into a lot of detail about Keturah's thriftiness. And Matt,
oh, this is so good.
She went to your alma mater, too.
Yes.
UGA. So I'm sure you already were like, oh, I like her.
I'm bonding with her already, man.
Yeah,
she's cheap. She went to UGA.
All I could think, you know, reading the story was, we got to have her on the show at some point. She seemed just super cool. But yeah, while running track at UGA, she would save the per diem that she got. Instead of spending it on restaurant food, like, you know, probably her fellow athletes were doing, spending all their per diem, she was putting that away, socking it away. And instead of nights out in Athens, which is a fun town to go out in, she would put together puzzles or play games with friends at home. She would even, some of her friends would say, were cited as saying that she would sit in the dark with the lights turned off to conserve electricity. Or she would, like, wrap herself in a blanket instead of turning on the heat, right?
Check.
Yeah. I feel like y'all are like,
these are all the cheap things that I do.
Y'all are probably like siblings separated at birth.
I love it. Yeah.
She also was like, talked about how averse she was to name brands. I feel like I love everything about her. And yeah, we're going to be pulling for her hard when
absolutely.
It comes to the Tokyo Olympics. Yeah. And triple jump, just what a cool thing to do. Like, I mean, you have to be an incredible athlete to do the triple jump. So yeah, just love that story. And I love too, just like what she was saying, is that you can get married and have an awesome wedding for a whole lot less than you think you have to spend.
Totally. Yeah, really inspiring story. And absolutely. It's going to make me, everyone calls her KO, evidently. So it makes me want to keep an eye out for her and to cheer for her whenever the Olympics actually do happen
for
this
sure.
year. But all right, Joel. So let's talk about working from home. Would you prefer to keep working from home, assuming you had a standard corporate 9-to-5 where you had to go into the office? Would you rather be able to continue working from home, you know, the flexibility that a lot of folks have had this past year, or get a huge raise?
So I would come down on the side of raise, but only because I like love working with my coworkers, seeing them in person. It's that kind of thing. I missed that environment.
Yeah, like being around lots of folks. I mean, let's be honest, you're just stuck with me down here now that we're full time doing
just
the podcast.
It's a little humdrum some days, you know? No, but I will say too, if I had like a really long commute, I would easily choose work from home.
Yeah.
Because commutes to me, you know, we talked about a long, long time ago how your commute is killing you. And that's just reality that commutes are awful for us mentally, physically. And I think if you have an hour plus commute or a 45 minute commute,
gosh,
I would definitely take the work from home.
I hear you, dude. Yeah, that was the subject of an interesting survey that we saw recently. Over 3,000 employees of some of the largest companies were asked whether that they would prefer getting a $30,000 raise or be able to continue working from home. And the results were a little shocking. 2 out of 3 folks who took the survey, they picked the work from home flexibility over that $30,000 bump in their pay. That's pretty crazy.
That is crazy.
Those results come at the same time as more employers are actually working to get their employees back into the offices that have been closed for more than a year. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out, because I think it's going to be tough to get employees back into that 2019 mindset when they've been basking in the increased flexibility that working from home has offered them over the past 15 months. As I was kind of thinking through it as well, I was like, okay, yeah, there's no way I would choose to go in, even though $30,000 is a lot of money. But then I just realized, too, that I'm going to have a hard time distinguishing working from home from being my own boss and working for my own business, you know? And so the only time I've ever worked from home has always been because I was doing it for myself. I've had the double letter score, but then on top of that, I've kind of had like the triple word score going on at the same time. And so like looking back, I know like there have been times and opportunities that I've turned down potential like great paying jobs with awesome benefits. Because just imagining myself having to get up at a certain time and go into work at a specific time, not having that flexibility kind of seriously bummed me out. So it's something I just, tend to avoid, I guess.
Yeah, it would have been interested to see like how it would have changed as they maybe increased. Like, all right, what if we give you $50,000?
Because at some point, at some point you're going to say, okay, it is now worth it, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not totally sure where that would have been for me.
Because if it's $50,000, it's like, I become 401k millionaire much earlier.
Seriously.
Than I otherwise wouldn't. I can quit work altogether earlier.
Yeah, but that changes the game.
Yeah, so interesting study there. And I think too, Matt, people will likely have the ability to push back on whatever work from home schedule their employer is saying that they want to see happen this coming fall, or maybe even sooner. It should look more, I think, like a negotiation than just an edict from your employer. And so I would say to all our listeners out there who maybe are starting to get emails from their employer saying, all right, time to come back in the office. Well, don't be afraid to ask for more than what they're offering. And as we've said before, since the job market is really hot right now, your ability to find similar work with another employer who's touting maybe like a better work from home policy really could be worth looking into if that's really important to you. You might even get paid more too by switching jobs. So I would just say don't take that email as like Moses coming down with the Ten Commandments. Like you don't have to necessarily abide by that if you have a well-reasoned conversation with your immediate supervisor. And you can always leave if it's that important to you. And for a lot of people, it is. It's understandable because Pandora's box has been opened and people are like, oh, no, I'm not going back to that former lifestyle. And I totally understand that response.
Yeah, it's hard to put that toothpaste back in the tube once it's come out, man. And, so we're talking about the hot job market here, but there are some folks out there who haven't been able to find suitable work. It's about to get even tougher for a lot of those people now. At least 24 states are dropping federal unemployment benefits. So if you are without a job and you've been receiving that additional pandemic unemployment assistance, that PUA, do you call it PUA or do you call it PUA?
PUA.
Just sounds funny to say PUA. So know that, right? Depending on where you live, you might not be getting it much longer. Many of these states that are shutting down the PUA are facing a labor crunch. And the leaders of those states believe that this is one of the best ways to solve that problem. And a lot of those states, too, are dropping that assistance next month in June.
In mid-June.
Dude, heads up. This is happening.
That's right. So if you are receiving that, find out whether your state is going to keep paying that out or not. And two, like some of those states aren't just attempting to pull out the rug, but they're also providing an incentive for folks to take some of the available jobs. That's how badly some of these states need workers to return. Arizona is one of a few states that's paying a bonus to workers who get back to work. For example, folks who get employed on a full-time basis are going to get $2,000.
Love it.
And part-time workers are going to get a bonus of $1,000.
So they're great.
Yeah, they're not just trying to remove. They're not just using a stick approach or using a carrot approach too.
Yeah, they got both.
Exactly. And Montana is doing something similar as well. So yeah, if your state is one of the ones dropping those increased payments, check to see if it's also adding that incentive to get back to work. Because yeah, you might even on top of that get an additional sign up bonus from the employer that, mm-hmm. that you're going to get hired by, because a lot of employers are offering some sort of unique bonus right now to bring people back. So maybe you get something from your state, something from your employer. It could be a win-win.
Dude, it's all about these incentives, right? Like it's going to be so interesting to see how these different states, how they fare after they try some of these programs as they get folks back to work. I mean, it's like evidence that we're such money nerds, right? Like that we're just excited to see what's actually going to happen. But that's definitely one of the benefits of states having this power, right? Because each one of these states is its own little experiment. And then down the road, economists can stop and they can look back at the data, and that can help direct policy, you know, and that hopefully will lead to better results in the future. But yeah, we will see how all that pans out. And okay, so man, earlier this week, we talked about traveling on the cheap with Nomadic Matt. We talked with him on Monday. As travel restrictions are easing up and more folks are getting vaccinated, travel is starting to look a whole lot more like it did back in 2019, a little more so than 2020, where nobody was doing any traveling. But there is one thing that we didn't discuss with Matt, and that's the worst way possible to travel.
We should ask him that question.
It's like, hey, what do you think folks should absolutely avoid doing? And it's not being too cheap. And in fact, this is traveling this way is going to cost you way more than you think. And we're talking about timeshares. Dude, it is timeshare season. And these companies that are out there are already out in full force. They're trying to sell you one. But don't take the bait. Don't bite. You want to avoid timeshares if you didn't already know that.
Yeah. And Matt, you've been to a timeshare pitch yourself back in the day.
I have, yep.
And you, you found the resolve not to bite.
It was also very easy to find that resolve since I was broke right out of college. I mean, and the reason we were doing it is because we're getting that free breakfast.
Yep.
And a $100 Visa gift card for our group. And so in our case, it made a lot of sense. But for most folks, I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah. It's honestly, for most people, it's not even worth that freebie. Because of that just small potential that the salesperson is so good that they overwhelm you into signing some papers, right? And the fact is that these policies are sold, not bought.
Yeah.
That's a key red flag, I think. Like, when have you ever gone online to search timeshares? Never. Never. It's really only...
Let's go perusing for the different timeshare options that are out there.
Right.
Oh, let's see.
It's only when you're on location somewhere
and
someone offers you something great and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll come to this. Yep. I'll come to this presentation. And then you end up being coerced, essentially, into signing up for one.
Yeah, yeah. If there's a presentation, that's a red flag that this is probably something you want to avoid. It kind of makes me think of the different MLM presentations and parties.
Right.
It's just like, okay, if this was so attractive and was going to be such a benefit to my finances, then why do you have to throw a party and sell me on it? This should be something that I'm seeking out. Nobody's seeking out timeshares.
Right, exactly, yeah. So I think another red flag is that the value of a newly bought timeshare plummets more than the value of a new car when you drive it off the lot.
Yeah.
So yeah, you buy something that's, let's say, $15,000, $18,000, $20,000, and it's immediately worth, you know, next to nothing. And so yeah, if you're traveling somewhere nice and someone tells you that you can get a freebie for going to a timeshare presentation, don't bother. It's a waste of your time. And if you end up buying one, you're going to be stuck with it along with the associated fees for years to come, because the resale market is almost non-existent. Like I said, what you pay for it, that value plummets. It's worth next to nothing or less than nothing in many cases. Sometimes people have to pay other people to take their timeshare off their hands because of those recurring fees that happen every single year once you've made that purchase.
Yeah, because you're stuck with that debt obligation. And so if you made a mistake in your past, maybe before you came across How to Money, before you realized that a timeshare wasn't the thing for you.
We're not going to judge you.
We're not going to judge you, not at all. And we want to help you. You can try to check out Timeshare Users Group. There's a website online where you could, you know, exchange good tips and ideas. But you can also list your property there. You can also check out the site Vacatia as well. We'll link to both of those in our show notes. But more than likely, you'll have to actually give your timeshare away because nobody wants to actually buy those. But in many cases, giving it away, it's actually going to be worth it because, you know, being able to escape those fees, being able to reclaim some of that money that was going towards this property that you were allowed to use at different, you know, points in the year, it would be a huge money win. It would be totally worth it for you to unload that property.
Yeah, timeshares are like a financial leech on your skin. Ugh, you know, yeah. It's rough. Was that too graphic? Sorry.
I thought about leeches recently because a friend there. She took her daughters to this like spot that we've been to before, where the kids can play in like this little river. And then I saw another friend comment on that post, and she said, "Hey, that's where my kids got leeches on their feet."
Uh oh.
Which totally made me when you mentioned the leeches, I immediately thought about leeches possibly on my kids' feet, which totally grossed me out.
That's so gross.
Yeah, it did kind of. That's why I made that face.
Sorry about that.
It's okay.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. For folks that want the show notes for this episode and the links to some of the sites that we mentioned, we'll have those up on our website at howtomoney.com.
Yeah, and if you come across an interesting story that you see in the news that you think maybe we should talk about here on the show, you can send that to us. You can email it to us at howtomoneypod@gmail.com. If this is your first time listening to the show, we would love it if you were to hit subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. Coming up on Monday, we've got an Ask How to Money episode, and that's where we answer listener questions, some great questions that y'all have sent in. So I'm looking forward to that episode. We hope everyone has a beautiful weekend. And Joel, until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.